The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
We begin with a story of small and medium-sized protests, but over a very wide area of the world this morning. People in the hundreds, in some cases thousands, from Asia to Lower Manhattan. That's the sound in Lower Manhattan over the weekend. Almost 100 were arrested. 100 Occupy Wall Street protesters were arrested on Sunday. 175 detained in Chicago over the weekend. There were violent, sympathetic protests in Rome. The stock exchange was targeted in London. And everywhere the messages are about outrage over a perceived collusion between government and corporations, a shout that began in the USA.
We need to stop these huge corporations, particularly the big banks on Wall Street, from controlling our members of Congress, from controlling folks who represent us in Washington.
But we forget that the U.S. government was actually created more than two centuries ago to rein in the power of corporations. In the days of the framers, corporations were only to be permitted to operate under the strict control of the states that granted their charters, charters that could be revoked at any time and for virtually any reason. That soon changed in the growing new country, whose identity was becoming synonymous with free and unbridled economic power. And the laws were eventually made to reflect this growing mission of governments to protect corporations and to grant them rights, even while regulating them. So to discuss this sort of long history of corporate identity in the United States, we're joined now by Jared Bernstein, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and a former economic policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden. Jared Bernstein, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jared, there's a perception out there among a lot of Americans, some protesters, some not, that governments and corporations are negotiating things together like bailouts and trade deals when individual citizens have only their vote and status as lowly customers or voters to protect themselves. Are they wrong?
Well, I don't think they're necessarily wrong. I mean, I think there's a lot right in what you just described. Certainly, if you look at the financial sector, probably a more specific subset of the corporate sector, but if you look at banks, for example, they got us into this mess. The U.S. government, funded by the taxpayer, got them out of it, and they're just about the only sector that's doing well right now. So there is a sense of economic alienation, really, on the part of lots of people who are playing by a set of rules that in former decades would help them and their families get ahead. Now they're struggling, and they've been so for a while. While those at the very top of the scale with access to global markets can shop anywhere, create jobs anywhere, and lately, with the help of the U.S. taxpayer, get back on their feet when they screw everything up.
Jared Bernstein, senior fellow in the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You also were domestic policy advisor for Vice President Joe Biden. Does Senator, now Vice President Biden, believe that this relationship between corporations and government needs to be fundamentally broken up?
No, I don't think anyone in the administration thinks in terms of broken up, but I do think they think in terms of fairness, and I think that they very much understand that middle class and low income people have to have precisely the kind of opportunities that they've lacked. I mean, this was a theme in the campaign for the president and the vice president back in 2008. They toured the country and they recognized that even after an economic expansion, before the Great Recession took hold, the middle class was struggling despite the fact that the economy had expanded. So something is structurally broken, and they understand that.
Here's me with Jared Bernstein, senior fellow for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And I'm wondering, Jared, if you can answer that question we asked a minute or two ago, which is, who is the villain here? There are some Wall Street protesters who obviously are protesting just Wall Street, the financial industry. There are others who are saying, we heard from a listener who said, you're looking at the wrong people. It's really Washington that's to blame.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I don't think there's a villain. I think that there is a fundamental breakdown in institutions across the board, whether it's corporations, whether it's banks, whether it's governments, whether it's the education system. Practically every bedrock institution that Americans have always looked to make this the great country that it's been is not serving the purpose that it should.
Although Jared, protesters would say, and others, even some analysts, economists like Paul Krugman would say, you know, it's not some mysterious virus that infected all of our institutions and made them dysfunctional. The game was rigged from the beginning. Corporations have rights like citizens, but they also have huge financial advantages and can hire lobbyists and have banks of lawyers. There's no way it's going to work out any differently.
Well, I think that there's some truth in that, except for the last part. It's not always been this bad. If you go back to the late 1970s, to take an example, and I'm not saying that was a great period, but certainly income concentration was less than half that it is today. Corporate power simply wasn't what it was. Money in politics was, of course, there. But frankly, you don't have to go back too far. Back to the 1990s, the middle class was doing much better. I don't think you'd see these kind of protests back then. Again, I think what's different now is that because of a level of fervor and all the things you just described, it's not just that corporations have power, it's that they've manifest that power to essentially get themselves excused from the rules in a way over the last decade or so that wasn't the case before.
All right, but there's a flaw in your logic there. You rig the game at the beginning and then add time and you're going to achieve this sort of result. What is the fix here?
I don't agree because, and I'll tell you why. We have the capability within, say, our Constitution to rein in corporate power, okay? I mean, if you disbelieve that, then we have an argument about the Constitution.
No. I'm with you there.
So we have the power to rein in this recklessness. The question is, are we going to take advantage of it? I'll give you a tiny example. There is a bill that was passed a few years ago called Dodd-Frank. Now, this is a very complex piece of legislation. There's no point in going through the whole thing, but the idea was to rein in and regulate financial markets so this doesn't happen again. Right now, you have powerful and that was a bill that was framed under the powers in the Constitution. And right now, you have powerful forces saying, no, you can't rein us in. You can't have a consumer financial protection agency. You can't have rules on banks. There's a continuum here, and we're way too far on the wrong side. We can get back, and the Occupy Wall Street movement is insisting that we do, and they're right.
Jared, but what you're stating, though, is that perhaps legislation is no match for the forces that are arrayed in the regulatory and lobbying realm to actually write the rules.
Well, that, I think, is an unfortunate reality of where we are, and that's why, at the root of this, it's money in politics.
All right. Jared Bernstein, Senior Fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. He was also the economic policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden. Jared, thanks so much.